Extra, extra, read all about it.
RandomChatter.com presents...
Agent Carter, you are going to run S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
I go to work.
With your hosts, Directors Shepard and Stolte.
You boys play nice.
I have orders for Agent Carter.
Calling all junior agents of the Strategic Scientific Reserve, it's now time for Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, brought to you by Kirby Fallout Shelters. Our fiberglass blast and fallout shelter will increase your chances of survival by 4,000%. If it's not a Kirby, it's not worth jack. I'm Station Chief Shepard.
And I'm Station Chief Stolte.
And today, we're bringing you the continuing adventures of Peggy Carter as she fights for truth, justice, and equal pay. Join us each and every week as we marvel at Agent Carter and show you that we're in the know. Well, Josh, welcome back to the exciting world of the late 1940s and, women's rights and communism and atomic fallout and all sorts of cool
stuff
like
that. Women's
rights
and communism, yes.
Yeah. Well, you can't have one without the other.
That's true. Someday, do you think they'll be doing a period piece on the early 2000s? Welcome to the exciting world of the early 2000s.
That would be fun. So I was just going to say, I know with my wife, we have a five-year plan that, you know, we have to keep going over. So
it's always important.
Always important. So this week we had a... This may be my favoriteest episode so far. It's hard to say. It was really over the top in comedy.
Yes.
But it also really had me like tense. Not that I was necessarily feared for Peggy, you know, getting killed or anything like that. That's kind of off the books, but it's, you know, you don't know how things are going to work out, and obviously all the changes that the characters go through. I was really pleased with this episode. It really made me feel a lot of different things.
I am with you completely. And you know, as far as worrying about characters dying, it kind of goes along with my whole philosophy of spoilers, right? But unless you're watching, you know, Game of Thrones or Walking Dead, you can pretty much usually assume that the hero of a continuing story or series is not going to die, but that doesn't make it any less exciting because there can be tense situations where you don't know what's going to happen and who else might suffer, you know, a drastic fate, because we don't know of anybody else on the show that wouldn't be able to die.
Howard would really be the only one at this point, I think.
That's true. Yeah, I suppose Howard. But he's really kind of just a guest.
Right, exactly. He's so much of a guest star. Yeah, I mean, the characters always are have, you know, for me, the journey is the interesting part. I mean, it is fun to see where the characters end up and everything like that and try to figure out how that's going to work. But, you know, obviously with these sort of stories, you know, there's a lot of things that the characters learn about themselves, or they're put in predicaments where they have to make really tough decisions. Like we see in this week's episode, Peggy was put in positions where she had to make some tough choices, as did a number of other characters. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the specific episode that we're going to cover, and then we've got a little bit of news and we'll get right into talking about it then.
All right. Well, we are talking about The Atomic Job. Sounds like a movie where, you know, you have to steal something out of a vault in Las Vegas or something. But
yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It aired on February 9th, 2016. It was episode 5 of season 2 of Agent Carter, written by Lindsay Allen and directed by Craig Zisk. That's a cool name. All right. Well, hey, you know that Valentine's Day is almost here.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming fast. So hopefully you're listening to this, you know, when we release it. And because if you didn't remember, Valentine's Day is coming up, you might want to go grab something. But what in the world would you get your wife if she was a Hollywood starlet? And not just a Hollywood starlet, but a maniacal genius that secretly manipulates you and has powers to absorb anyone she wants because of her exposure to and consequent, you know, infestation with zero matter.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, that is, right? I mean, the list is short. Well, you get her a nuclear bomb, of course.
Oh, of course.
Yes. That's what, you know, Whitney Frost, a.k.a. Agnes Scully, of course, convinces her husband to break into the Roxxon facility with the help of some mafia thugs.
Yes.
To get, I like the little touch with their shoes, but we can talk about that. But to get her the bomb that she needs to recreate that experiment that led to the discovery of the zero matter in the first place. But, you know, Agent Carter, she's not too keen to let her get it. So she makes an attempt to head her off with the help of her brand new team, who I'm excited about. But Frost and Chadwick are already there. So, you know, confrontation is inevitable, of course. The problem is Whitney touches her. And you know, Peggy has to do whatever necessary to get away while Jarvis tries to take the radioactive core himself. And it gets even worse after they barely escape with their lives as Dr. Wilkes begins to disappear again.
Yeah. Well, this is the midpoint of the season here, so, you know, all sorts of darkness is starting to creep into the show. But the agents of SSR doesn't quite have the same ring as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but...
they got to work their way up to that S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Yeah. What does that mean? I mean, somebody really wanted this to spell SSR, so... Hey, before we get talking about this episode, I did want to do a little follow-up on stuff we discussed last week. We were talking about the Hollywood 10 had been mentioned. We were talking a little bit about communism and the threat of being branded as a communist. Vernon Masters did so to Peggy. And I made a comment about the fact that we were still, you know, several years away from the McCarthy hearings. So I had done some other research over the last week, and while Joseph McCarthy is pretty much synonymous with the communist witch hunts of the 50s, he was only one leader of the Senate committee that was researching communism in America, the HUAC, the House on Un-American Activities Committee, and what I found out is, as I mentioned last week, the Hollywood 10 had just, in as far as the time period of the show, the Hollywood 10 had just hit big, and that was 10 writers and directors in Hollywood that had been blacklisted for being communists, either rightly or wrongly, by the Senate. So the HUAC committee, or the HUAC hearings, had been going on for probably a couple years at this point, so... It was big news at the time, and you know everybody probably had much red fever on their mind as the you know red menace spread across the globe that you know communism was going to take over and everything like that. So I just wanted to kind of address that because I felt I made it sound like we were still a way off from that, but that is really what's going on in the world right now, and a lot of this was centered in Hollywood at the time because, of course, even as it happens today in the 80s and in the 90s and in the 2000s and stuff like that, you know, Hollywood is the land of Sodom and Gomorrah and indecency, and you know we need to be protected from ourselves, obviously. So
that's why I try to avoid that. I only go to places like you know Las Vegas.
Ah, good.
Because I am pure.
Well, I kind of hate to break it to you, Josh, but they call Las Vegas Sin City.
Do they? I thought it was Sin City. I thought it was... Anyway.
Oh, no. See, that's in Ohio.
Oh, Sin City in Ohio. That's right. Yeah. I forgot. Thank you for following up on that because, I think I even mentioned to you last week that I don't recall a lot of that... communist.
You're going to take the Fifth Amendment now? Fourth Amendment?
No, I was curious because I didn't remember. I know I did a lot of reading on that in either late high school or early college, and it was very interesting to me, but I didn't remember a lot of the details of when it took place and things, you know, just the big stuff that everybody kind of knows. So thanks for following up on that.
Sure. And again, I'll have to recommend Trumbo to anybody out there. That's a great film that really kind of puts you at the center of the movement through the lens of Hollywood, and Dalton Trumbo, one of the writers. But That film, I mean, I tell you, stuff sticks with you. The players are all different, and we're not talking about communism, but, you know, I feel like there's a lot of, you know, the same song and dance going on, you know, even now in the early 21st century. So it's kind of strange how, you know, history tends to repeat itself, and that is the truth. So, question that comes up a lot, and that you and I hear through, you know, our social media channels and friends and stuff like that, is: will there be future seasons of Agent Carter? The first season seemed to work out, but we didn't know if there was going to be a second season until just before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started its third season, so, you know, August, September time frame. And with other Marvel TV-branded shows in the works, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. presumably continuing, you know, is there room to have Peggy Carter still going on? Well, The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline.com are reporting that Haley Atwell is in a new pilot called Conviction, which is, I guess they put it, they term it as like a first contract show or something like that. So basically, if this new show gets picked up, her responsibility would be to that show over anything else. And I guess it's the way the contract gets written. And it would probably be a full season show versus a, you know, like a 13 episode show. Now, that does not preclude her, of course, from continuing to play Agent Carter. It kind of is just, you know, what's her time frame. But if I could imagine, if she was in a weekly TV series, you know, that started in September and went through May, you know, with a couple weeks off here and there, that there would just not be enough time for her to film, you know, 10, 8, 13, whatever episodes of Agent Carter. Again, doesn't preclude a third season from happening at some point. And, you know, nothing is set in stone until, you know, later in the fall when we start hearing about this stuff. But there, you know, she is working on another pilot. So there is potential that she would not be available for this show. And, of course, can't really have an Agent Carter show without Peggy Carter. That's
no,
just
you can't.
My opinion.
It makes it very difficult. Then it's just, you know, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So they're,
right.
You know, it's hard to like feel terribly horrible about that, because I'm glad that, you know, Haley Atwell's getting another opportunity to have like a full time show and be, you know, something on potentially something bigger.
Oh yeah, I'm glad that people get work.
Right. Yeah.
It's
exactly.
Nice.
So, especially, you know, if she's as talented as she is, but that would be a little disappointing, and especially when this show has very quickly hit its stride, and the second season has done nothing to disappoint me so far this year. Whereas, you know, we had a couple slow points in the first season, but that doesn't necessarily, even if you know, that show does get picked up and it's successful or whatever, doesn't mean that she wouldn't ever be playing Agent Carter again. And didn't they used to do, I don't know, like the $6 Million Man or something like that every once in a while would come back with a next
TV movie
or something like that. They could still do stuff like that, maybe in the summertime.
They used to do TV movies a lot. I don't know that that's really a viable solution to some of their stuff. Who knows? They could do something, you know, during the summer and, you know, put it out. You know, they could decide, hey, we're going to shoot this during the summer, but we won't air it until January, mm-hmm. you know, something like that as well. But also, you know, if we got two seasons of this, I would not be disappointed, you know, if they decided, you know, that's all we're going to do for right now. And again, like you said, maybe do a special of it, because it's been fun with what we've been doing so far. So,
absolutely.
And if they come up with, say, you know, maybe Agent Carter won't continue, but they're going to do that Marvel's Most Wanted series with Mockingbird and Hunter. Maybe that'll be the mid-season show next year, or the other to-be-determined superhero show or something like that. So,
yep.
Marvel's got my attention.
Lots of options.
Yeah, and I'm just along for the ride, and I'm enjoying all this. Also, we've talked about the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has said they're returning on March 8th, But with the number of episodes of Agent Carter, which is 10, we've got 5 more episodes left. How's that going to work? Because there's really only 3 weeks of time left before March 8th. So we got the rest of the season lined up here. So next week on February 16th, episodes 6 and 7 of Agent Carter will air. So they're going to do another 2-hour special. It's interesting that they're choosing to do it kind of here in the middle instead of at the end. I'm guessing it's the way the episodes kind of pair up. Or maybe it's what they could get on the calendar. The week after, on the 23rd, episodes 8 and 9, and then the March 1st finale will be episode number 10. And again, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will return on March 8th, and we'll be back to our normal Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files podcast with that. And maybe a special guest will join us.
So, wonderful.
Yeah. So, so 2 weeks of 2 hours of Agent Carter, you know, so that'll be the third kind of 2-hour movie we've gotten for this. And if the previews from next week have anything to do with what they're going to show, which they obviously should because they are previews, that was the weirdest sentence I ever just said. it looks like there's some phenomenal stuff coming up here. Right now I'm like, I don't really know where, I mean, I kind of know where the episode or the season has to go, but I'm really kind of out of ideas as to how it's going to happen. So maybe we'll uncover some ideas while we discuss the this week's episode.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to this discussion because I was very entertained throughout this whole thing.
So I think the main thing that I want to start with it, the Peggy Carter's character and the fact that Hayley Atwell can move between this intense drama and the farcical comedy that they put, or the slapstick comedy, I guess, is really amazing because I really believe her character in both situations. So when, you know, it's like she's fighting Whitney Frost, I believe that she is this tough woman that, you know, has conviction and can handle herself in these kind of tense situations. And then when she's trying to break into Roxxon and erase Hugh Jones's memory and stuff like that, and is, you know, this probably the broadest comedy we've seen on the series so far, I would say. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I would think so. It was within a relatively short period of time, very fast-paced, lots of jokes thrown in, not just one-liner type jokes or banter, but there was also some physical comedy, some good little kind of, I don't know what you'd call this, but kind of a montage comedy. I'm thinking of when she was breaking in there and Hugh Jones kept showing up, you know, and it would just kept cutting in, and it went with the music really well. So, I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, we got a whole spectrum of comedic stylings within a short period of time.
And I totally believed, you know, again, I totally bought into the fact that she was in this. Now, I realized how farcical the whole zapping him in the head was, and I was speaking his lines kind of before he said them, you know, where he walks out the second time and he's like, "Agent." It's like, you know, I saw that joke coming. It did not make it any less funny to me. I think you had mentioned this to me earlier before we started that. I mean, it was just, I was laughing out loud throughout this episode, but I was also, I think I had a couple gasps in here as well. There were, it was equal levels of humor and drama, and probably the most balanced episode as far as that goes. Now, I did see people online that thought that it was too much, which I can, you know, I can imagine that this is not your cup of tea, I guess. You know, it's, you're tuning in for what is ostensibly a spy show, and you're getting more of a, I don't want to say a sitcom. But
no, it's not. Yeah, I mean, I sometimes I have to stop myself from being a defender of it because I enjoy it quite a bit. But honestly, I can see their point of view. You know, they come, they like those kind of comic book and I don't want to say gritty because it's, you know, Marvel movies generally aren't real gritty. You know, they have some lightheartedness in them. You know, you think of Ant-Man and, I mean, even the Avengers movies, they had, you know, jokes thrown in here and there. But it was you wouldn't really call any of them a comedy, per se.
I would say that there are comedic elements.
Right, exactly. And I think this is just kind of right on that border there of being a drama with comedic elements and just being a straight out comedy with some dramatic elements. So, for me, I enjoy that, in a show like this more than say there was no comedy in it and it was just straight drama, straight spy stuff. I don't think that I would be enjoying it quite as much.
Well, as I've mentioned in previous weeks, on our Agent Carter season here, it's so the humor is so much a part of the time. I believe that the reason that they're going the direction they are with the humor is because they, you know, they're doing an homage to film of the time or Hollywood, you know, comedies of the time, as well as Hollywood spy films of the time. You know, they're just trying to capture a sense of the late 1940s in Hollywood, and you know it was, you have your drama elements, you know, you've got your mobsters that are, you know, jockeying to get in on the freeway projects, which at that point the Los Angeles freeway system was not something that was around, and then you've got this, you know, comedy that just again, in this episode, seemed to be really broad and forefront. I guess there the scenes that required comedy, unlike in previous episodes, like you said, where there was some banter or a kind of a throwaway joke line or something like that, like something Jarvis would do. This one, I mean, it was one entire set piece, one entire scene, very important scene of Peggy having to get this key from the head of Rocks on Oil, and they turned it into this kind of crazy, you know, Three's Company sort of setup shtick, I guess.
Let me ask you this, without getting into this kind of deep discussion about this area, one area that I did, I guess it stood out to me, I'm not complaining because I didn't mind it, but one area that stood out to me that was maybe a little over the top with it was when she was gathering their team and they decided to use Rose and Dr. Samberly as part of the team. And those two were, you know, I mean, in all fairness, complete caricatures of real people. I mean, that they really are, right?
Great point. That's kind of my complaint about Samberly, because he feels the most cartoonish out of all the other characters. He's, you know, he I can't even, it's the way his dialogue is, it's kind of stilted.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's a caricature of somebody that you don't typically meet people like that in real life, which any time that you throw a character like that in any kind of a story, it will not ruin it, mess it up, but it makes it feel like it is not real life. You know, I mean, you don't, it's like sitcoms.
Right.
I mean, sitcoms don't feel like real life because they're so comedic, right? So I don't know. I wanted to ask you, do you feel like they were a little bit too much, or are you still okay with the balance that they're trying to achieve?
That was one other scene that I wanted to call attention to, because, it was kind of over the top. You know, he's always complaining about, you know, it's, you kind of already know the jokes as they're set up, because he could have worked any place, but he chose to work here, you know, and I was told that I had great qualifications. Oh yeah. Who told you that? Oh, well you did, you know, it's, like you said, it is a very much of a caricature, but because it's not just Samberly, because it's Rose to an extent as well, especially in that scene, they got the whole exchange of them talking about the pie that she made and, you know, him stammering and stumbling over the words and I like pie and all this stuff. I mean, really funny scene. You know, it does feel like something that they would have done in a comedy around this time to try to skirt the, like the Hays Code or something like that for, you know, censorship. But I felt because there were kind of two characters that Rose and Dr. Samberly, Aloysius, had their, you know, they could be this really comedic, caricatured couple. And then you've got Peggy and Daniel, who are, you know, are more grounded and observing this, you know, heightened level of craziness between these other two characters. That didn't really bother me that much, but I'm very aware of the way the characters are behaving and that it's, you know, it feels like it's being done for my benefit, kind of fan service, but not really, because I mean, it's not, you know, it's not like things that fans are expecting, but it's being played to the audience very much like, in a play where, you know, you've got a character who does kind of an aside to the audience to let them know, you know, like a little wink, wink as they're saying a line. That they're not really talking to the characters in the moment on the stage. They're talking to the audience, but it's, you know, the words they're saying are to the other characters, but they're really talking to the audience. That's kind of how I felt about this. And I'm glad they put in the sequence of the slow motion walk, because it is a really hilarious moment. You've got the music playing along and then there's that little pause in the music, where they're singing Pistol, Pack and Mama, and Samberly stumbles right there at that moment, which I can only imagine was planned to fit in with the music. But if it wasn't, that was a great, you know, element that they put into it. And then they all kind of walk out slowly and stand there, you know, just like you've seen in dozens of other movies. And they're really making fun of that. Like, the show is making fun of that. It's not even the characters don't obviously know what they're doing in the time and place of the show, but you know, the show is really making fun of this. And then they all pause and it's like, well, where's the car? And he's like, oh, and then we all come out of it and it's boom, 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 back to normal. And Jarvis goes and gets the car. And then we transition into a much more serious scene where they have to break into the Roxxon refinery and stuff like that. So, it's fun. And yes, you can, you know, there's reasons why people would be critical of this kind of stuff. But again, for this episode, because of the heightened levels of drama that they put into it and, you know, the fact that our main character is seriously injured in it, I felt that that's why the comedy got amped up. Because if you're going to have serious emotional dramatic scenes and stuff like that, to balance that, you also have to take your comedy up to that level to kind of, as you know, as a release for people to have that roller coaster ride as you're going through the show.
Well, that's why I try to incorporate comedy in my daily life, right? Just to relieve the stress of the rest of the day. So I think I may be one of those caricatured people in my friends' lives. I think that might be me as
I was going to say, do they say that? They go, yeah. He doesn't seem like a real guy. Kind of like a caricature of a real guy.
I'm not sure that I'm the main character in the TV show of my life. I think I might be one of those little sidekicks. Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, whatever. As long as I got a part to play, that's fine.
So My big question that, you know, so Peggy seems to have been sidelined a little bit here with that. I gotta tell you
a little bit.
So she's hanging on, and I'm like, oh, she's gonna like reach up and grab, you know, Whitney's leg or something, like, you know, you see in other films. Again, because they've done certain setups of action pieces like we've seen in other films or TV shows. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're going to continue doing that, and then they kind of pull the rug out from under us and, you know, switch it up. But, you know, then she just lets go and drops. So I really honestly don't have a really good grasp of how is Peggy going to defeat Whitney. I mean, she just seems to be getting stronger and stronger here. And Peggy obviously knows what she's a little more knows now what she's up against. I don't think anybody really realizes what happened last week, you know, because the bug cut out. They know that Whitney did something to this Mr. Hunt.
Well, and even if it hadn't cut out, all they could do was hear. They didn't see what happened.
Right, but they knew that Whitney was doing something. So, I mean, mm-hmm. they know that she's dangerous, and Peggy knows that there's this pain from her touch. And I'm sure that between the experiment that Dr. Wilkes showed her at the beginning of the episode where they were looking at the piece of the tissue sample from the dead girl from episode one, Peggy will probably, you know, there's enough information for her to piece together, like, what is going on with Whitney and how to deal with that. I would assume, though, at this point, that Wilkes plays a role in how they're going to be able to defeat Whitney.
I would think so. And I think we may have even mentioned that a few episodes back when they first had the accident together, you know, that they are tied together in that somehow. So
right. Well, and at that time, I remember I was saying, because I was pretty sure that Wilkes wasn't gone. You know, Whitney survived, but at that point, we didn't know if Wilkes had survived until the was it last episode or the third episode, I guess. Mm-hmm. So. So Whitney now seems to be kind of fully, I put fully powered here, but, it's more like, she's completely in control of her life now, I guess is what I wanted to, how I wanted to put this, because last week we saw the flashbacks of her studying and doing science and stuff like this, but she wasn't really in control of what was going on around her in her life, but she had her brains, but, you know, her mom, as you had pointed out, you know, told her that, you know, she really just needs her looks. That's what's going to get her by. And she goes to Hollywood and kind of, you know, starts to trade on that beauty. But, you know, so she started acting in both her job and in life to pretend to be this other person, to be Whitney Frost. And has gathered a lot of power in her personal life. But I think it probably was all very much a sham. If she was always feeling like that brainiac little girl that, you know, nobody liked and she wouldn't smile and stuff like that. I'm sure there's an element of that there. But now she's got this zero matter power where, you know, she doesn't have to pretend anymore. Her husband in this episode starts bossing her around, telling her how it's going to be, and she just steps right up to him and grabs his face. And, you know, I was not sure that he wasn't just going to vaporize right there.
I think he was even less sure of you than you were. You get the look of terror on his face. But now, you mentioned that you felt like she was fully powered. I think she's got more to show us. I think she's going to become even more powerful. I even feel like every time that she absorbs somebody, she kind of gets a little stronger or more powerful or something. And we really don't know what she plans to do with the bomb. Because they didn't really say that. She just said she needs an atomic bomb. She wants them to get it. But am I mistaken? They don't really indicate what she's going to do with it. Is that right?
Well, Wilkes indicated that he felt that she wanted to repeat the experiment in the desert.
Right.
What was the result of that? That was opening up a crack in the sky so she can get more zero matter. Because she was talking about the fact that they could end world hunger and create peace and all this stuff to her husband. And if they had more zero matter, look at all the stuff they could do.
Right,
so it was
right.
It was implied, I guess.
But that, and that's what she told him. But to me, it felt more like she wanted more power. Like if she got this bomb and to do whatever it was going to do, and she could become even stronger. Even you know the crack gets bigger every time she absorbs somebody.
Right.
So that's why I think she's got lots more to show us. And as the last five episodes here kind of push on, I think we're going to see her doing stuff that's quite a bit bigger than just absorbing a person. I think she's going to start to project some of this stuff. Now, I don't know as much about this the history of this comic book villain as some other ones, and or maybe as you do. But so I don't know exactly what her powers are in the comic book. But
I don't really think she has powers per se. She's just kind of a mafioso in with a mask.
Oh, okay. Well, so. She's already surpassed that.
Yeah, and that's kind of that's why I didn't want to say that. That's why I didn't like saying that she was fully powered, because from a superpowers perspective, I do feel there's much more that she can gain or that she has to grow on that. But she feels like she's unencumbered now by her past life and maybe feeling helpless. I guess maybe that's where it is that, you know, she...
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that.
Totally in control of every aspect of her life.
Yeah.
She's really smart, she's beautiful, and she has this incredible power. So, like,
it's interesting.
Know, she doesn't have to kowtow to anybody.
Because, in honesty, she's really not in control. I mean, she's very powerful, but she's kind of, you know, dug herself a little hole here of danger. Just from revealing herself, you know, she didn't get the bombs that she wanted. She's definitely not powerless or anything like that, but I think she's a lot more confident, in what she has the ability to do than she actually is.
Right. Well, she's forging ahead when, you know, and she's burning bridges behind her. As I noted in my notes here that, you know, at the end of the episode, Calvin is calling the council together, basically going behind her back. Not sure what his plan is, but I don't see this ending well for anybody, unfortunately.
No.
As the episode's going on, though, there was the one scene where she's talking to Calvin on the sofa, and she's all excited, telling him about what her plan is. You know, they need the bomb. And she kind of leans over and is trying to give him a kiss or something like that. And he just pulls back. And I turned to my wife and I said, hey, no offense, honey, but if you absorbed this black ooze and sucked, and I just watched you suck some people up, I really wouldn't want to kiss you either. And she's like, no, I would not imagine that no one would want to kiss you. I think she feels like, oh my gosh, it's like she's probably, it's like trying coffee for the first time, right? She's like, oh my gosh, look at all this. I'm so excited and happy. And everybody else is looking at her and going, oh my gosh, this is scary and crazy. It's, I mean, she's, as a villain in a show about people without superpowers and someone who has kind of gotten this power that is, as you kind of were just saying, way more powerful than she is probably prepared for it to be. Like, I feel it's one of those things. I mean, we're always seeing a manifestation on her face. I'm afraid it's just one of these things where she's going to use it and it's just going to tear her apart.
Yeah.
And then it's out there. Like, and then is it loose or, you know, whatever. But she's just terrifying as a villain.
Yeah, I agree.
They did a really good job. Like, I didn't know how far they were going to go with this. And I'm suitably concerned for any number of characters, in the show, because like you said, you know, we don't know who's safe. Also, I want to know a little bit more backstory about her dealings with the this mob boss who is the guy that played him, Ken Marino, usually plays comedic parts. So to see him as this kind of real tough mob boss was without any hint. And those scenes, I don't think they had any hint of humor. It was, well, actually, I take it back. They had dark humor in them. I mean, him basically beating one of his guys to a pulp to prove a point to Chadwick that, you know, you're going to make sure my name stays out of the front pages of the paper. I thought he did a great job, and those guys, I'm really concerned about those guys too, or him. I don't know what else he's got up his sleeve, but
I did really like how they emphasized, I guess, or showed the audience that the guards at the facility there were the mafia guys.
That was
interesting. I liked that, and man, they were some pretty intimidating guards. You know, that was not like some buffoon guards that they got past. They even kind of tried to get them past, tried to get past them, at, like treating them like buffoon guards, you know. But
right.
they were kind of mean. Not used to seeing that.
Right, which is that other kind of aspect. You know, you've still got these two characters that are sort of farcical caricatures. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, me and my wife are lost, and we need to, can you give us instructions? And the guards were like, complete no nonsense. It was that, you know, again, it's the two parts of the show kind of rubbing up against each other. And it kind of eases us back into the drama part from a comedy, right? We had comedy right before the break. We come back. It's a little bit funny still, but now, okay, wait, we're getting back into the real world with other characters that are dangerous. And then we're in, and it's no nonsense. And, you know, there's plutonium rods that we got to deal with. And, you know, there are a few jokes, but it's that jokes to that the characters are saying to ease the tension of the scene, such as, hey, how's that getting the door open going? And then the response being, hey, how's that not blowing us up going? You know, it's like, well, that's point taken. So, yeah, I'm wondering if there's going to be maybe a multiple showdown of different characters, you know, with Whitney and Peggy and the council and the mob. All, you know, coming together at one point, trying to, you know, jockey for control here or something like that.
Yeah, and also don't forget Vernon Masters in there.
Oh, right.
He wasn't even in this week, but...
Right. I guess I include him with the council a little bit, but yeah, there's definitely... He is a free radical, I guess, along kind of with Thompson, too,
right.
Because we heard, Thompson wasn't in this week's episode either, but... we know he's still inquiring about Peggy and her vacation. There was a little throwaway line from Sousa about that. So interesting to see where that's all going to come together. Let's talk a little bit about the dark matter and Wilkes, about Jason and his tangibility. He, through no control of his own, I guess, because he was kind of just messing around, he absorbed a very, very small amount of dark matter and restored his tangibility.
Let's back up just a little bit, because it wasn't specifically dark matter that he absorbed, was it? Wasn't it the tissue from that they had recovered from Hunt?
It was from the lady in the lake.
Yeah, the girl, right?
Right, right. I forget her name, but yeah.
But so that was like a tissue sample. So not even specifically dark matter, but it acted like that.
So if you remember the body, when Whitney kind of sucked stuff out of the body, there were all those lines, you know, like you could see the veins and stuff, which I believe was pieces of dark matter that had infected the body.
Oh, okay. Kind of almost like what's happening on her forehead there?
Exactly. And the way that I saw it was that there was this tissue sample that was kind of infused with dark matter, or, you know, a little bit of dark matter, and he was basically able to suck it out, right?
Oh,
so
okay.
It was that,
all right.
It was a little bit of black goop that was moving around inside the jar. But it wasn't coming out. It was following him, and he also said it was kind of calling to him as well. So, like, you know, all pieces of dark matter are attracted to each other, you know, something like that. But he gets a little bit, whether it was or it wasn't, he gets a little bit of this stuff in his system. His eyes go black, and he becomes tangible for a short period of time. I'm assuming until kind of it evened out through his quote unquote body. I don't know really how any of that's going to work. We saw Whitney, you know, suck a lot more of it out of the corpse, and her eyes turned black, but that was, you know, it, she was already corporeal. It just kind of, you know, made her scar bigger. Do you think that, Jason is going to be able to, you know, absorb some more of this and become solid again? Is that, do you think they're going to go there with that?
Something like that is going to make him at least visible, if not tangible. Ultimately, though, I think he's probably going to make an ultimate sacrifice for Peggy to stop Whitney.
Okay.
So I'm not sure he's going to make it through this season by the end.
Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, that's... You know, they have set up the dichotomy. He's a very, very good character. Who, again, he and Whitney were born, you know, born again at the same time. They were both, their problems were both caused by the same accident, which, you know, in comic books, superheroes are often born at the same time that their evil counterparts are, you know, or the whatever accident causes the superhero to get their powers usually causes the villain to get there. So I think saying that he's going to sacrifice himself in some way is probably a good bet for this. So we'll see what's going on with that.
Well, and you got kind of a little love quadrangle going on there because, you know, he and Peggy, they have some feelings for her. Sousa has feelings for Peggy, and Peggy kind of has feelings for Sousa, and Violet has feelings for Sousa, but Sousa doesn't necessarily have the feelings for Violet. I mean, you got a lot of interaction there, and I think ultimately probably it's Sousa and Peggy that are kind of destined to hook up at some point.
Yeah. So,
which we may never actually see, right. But I think they'll probably imply.
Right, because we know at some point she does get married. We just don't know who that is. And at this point, it seems like it could be Sousa. I thought he and Violet had a nice interaction going. And I don't know if I still buy Violet kind of, you know, saying, oh, my gosh, you know, you still have the hots for Peggy or something like that. I mean, it was he brought his friend over to his fiance to have her help. And I don't know, it, that seemed to just kind of move along a little fast for the amount of time they take to set up some other elements of the show.
Yeah. I suppose, although, I kind of got from that is that she's seeing how he's looking at her and how much he cares for her. And, you know, that alone, isn't necessarily enough to make you, I guess, doubt your significant other, I guess. But it might make you question it a little bit. And when she did confront him about it, I think his reaction solidified her thoughts that, yeah, he really does. Because, I mean, you know, he was kind and polite and respectful to her. And I think he really does love Violet, just not the same way as Peggy. But the way he reacted to her, I think, really showed her, oh, he really does love her. I think, you know, it's just a feeling you have. You can't really explain it, but...
Yeah.
It was kind of fast, though. I see what you're saying. I kind of feel sorry for Violet, you know. She's a good lady.
Right, and I didn't feel any of that weird vibe with Violet like I had in whatever the previous episode was that we had talked about where there was just a weird shot. It seemed like she might not have been who we thought she was.
But right.
We'll see. Do you think... based on stuff that happened this episode, it appears that Violet knows that Sousa is part of a secret organization or a spy or something along those lines. But unless I missed it, I don't feel that was explicitly shown previously. I thought that she just thought that he ran the talent agency, you know, as the cover that they've got. But he mentioned something about the mission. And he's like, you know, I can't tell you anything about the mission that she was on. And Violet's like, oh, no, I know.
I've always kind of felt that she knew he does something, that he can't talk to her about. You know, I mean, like a sort of a government job. You know, maybe not. They don't get into specifics of what it is or what even department he works for, but she knows that he does official stuff. That's how I've kind of always felt, just the way that they interact with each other. I know we've only seen her in the front office there of the so-called talent agency with Rose, but
they wouldn't let a civilian going back or anything like that. I mean, I can understand that. I just thought she thought that it was the front, you know, that it was the talent agency, but
I think she does. I get the feeling that she does know a little bit. I mean, like that he does stuff like that.
Right. Like you might know that somebody, you know, goes to work at the Pentagon, but you really don't have any other idea about anything
else. Right.
Yeah.
Unless you're Jamie Lee Curtis and you're married to, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You don't know stuff like that.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, all right. Well, a lot of interesting stuff going on this week. Like I said, this might just because of the intensity of this episode in both comedy and drama. Maybe my favorite episode so far, but
and Rebar interaction.
Oh yeah, Rebar is.
Now I thought she was going to fall. I could see that, but I didn't realize that they were going to go that far into it, and it was shocking.
I may have said a bad word when that happened out loud, very loudly, in front of my family as we were watching it. Yeah, because, I mean, I was not expecting that. Like you said, I thought she was going to fall. And, you know, it looks like a stunt, right? She falls and, you know, obviously there's like a pad there, whatever. But to come around and see this, I didn't know how much rebar was sticking out. I'm glad it was just the one piece, I guess. But.
And it landed there. I thought she was going to fall as I was watching it. I you know, assumed all that was going to happen. But as I was watching her face, it kind of occurred to me that she wasn't entirely confident that she was going to survive that fall.
When she was hanging there, you mean?
Well, as she was making the decision to go ahead and let go, it didn't seem to me like, you know what, I'll just jump and I'll kind of land strategically or something like that. It felt like, well, I'm gonna fall, but I may not make it. But she thought, well, that's better than the alternative, which
right. I mean, obviously the pain that she had endured with Whitney was something that probably caught her by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you see a flash of that go across her face, but she recovered really quickly. I mean, obviously, I think. If you counted the amount of time that Whitney was holding on to Peggy versus when Whitney was holding on to Hunt, you know, it's like, well, Peggy really should be dead, but you know, the dramatic,
sometimes when she, you know, she was doing those tests with the mice and things like that, where she was learning how to control it. So maybe she hadn't started that yet or, you know, wasn't in the moment or whatever. So she can't, and she touched Chadwick too. Right. On the face. So
she has to will it.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. So that's true. Not really many references I saw this week to anything. I mean, Roxxon Oil is we've talked about that in previous episodes, especially in season one. Roxxon being a large oil company, petroleum company in the Marvel Comics universe and in the Marvel Cinematic universe here as well.
Not to be confused with their competitor, Rocks Off.
Right, exactly, which I believe is a dance club. but the car that Peggy and her team used to drive to Roxxon, it has the name on the side, and I didn't notice this until, like, right at the end of the second time I was watching it, I had to rewind it again to double check it. It says Civil War Antiques.
I saw that.
Which I thought was great, of course, because Captain America Civil War is coming out here in a few months, and I feel like that is a direct shout out to that film. I mean, it's, you know, the real Civil War, not the real Civil War. I guess there have been lots of civil wars. The American Civil War, you know, in the 40s would, you know, have been, 50 years previous or so?
Sure.
And, yeah, you know, you'd be totally plausible to have an antique car driving around with a place that has Civil War antiques. So, but, yeah, that was about it. And nothing else that really jumped out at me other, you know, than just references to the characters already in the show.
Yeah, I got to get me one of those belt buckles, though, you know.
That is pretty cool, I will say. I didn't know you could have belt buckles that had, like, a hidden compartment in them. Put, like, a stick of Juicy Fruit in there just for emergencies or something like that.
Juicy Fruit, that's like nitroglycerin Juicy Fruit, like that kind of thing?
No, actually, no, not Juicy Fruit. What was the one that had all the colors that had the zebra?
What was that?
Fruit stripe.
Oh, I haven't had fruit stripe. We got to get some fruit stripe. That's good.
Maybe for next week, Josh.
Okay. All right.
But for now, that's all we've got for Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. So thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much. And thanks for everybody that's been tuning in, especially to the new Carter area of our show. Carter area. That doesn't sound right, but the segment of our show. If you guys enjoyed this episode and not the last statement that I just said, make sure, hey, you leave feedback for us on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you and kind of spread the word to everybody to listen to not just our Agent Carter show, but also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. If you want to get in touch with us directly, send us an email. shield@randomchatter.com is where you can find us. Or if you want to go over to Twitter there, you can find us at Agents Podcast. And, of course, Facebook, facebook.com/Agents Podcast.
You can also check out the other podcasts Josh and I host here on the randomchatter.com network, including Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. You can also find our shows on our newest partner at forcecast.net in the Outer Rim Network, and on where all of our shows are available on that one feed over there as well. You can also find this shows in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So, for Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Until next week, bidding you adios, auf Wiedersehen, aloha.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agent Carter can be found at abc.go.com. Agent Carter and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.